All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Doc Who Pod. I'm Josh. Joined with me, as always, is my co-host, Jack Phillips.
Hello there.
And the second co-host, Bradley Fuller, just went on mute as I introduced him.
Oh, did I? Hello, can you hear me?
There, he's back.
Yeah.
I need to stop looking at the screen. I can see every time you mute yourself to eat an onion ring.
He's back from holiday, and look what happens. He's munching away as we're trying to fucking record.
Oh, yeah, I'm back. I missed the last two, didn't I?
Oh, you did, yeah.
Woken up.
You didn't miss anything exciting, to be fair.
Dead episodes, to be fair, but we're back with a bang.
Aren't we just? Yeah, absolutely
back
with
a
bloody bang.
Yeah.
We're going to look today at... anyone got the episode names? Silence in the Library, Forest of the Dead. There we go. Two absolute bangers. Stephen Moffat bangers. Just before we jump in... Oh, no, actually, let's hit it with... In a sentence, Bradley Fuller.
Sentence, not a word.
Sentence, not a word.
Didn't think of this.
Always so woefully unprepared.
You meant to remind us that you're going to do this.
I just do it.
I'd say a complex story that's worthwhile in the long run.
Okay, is the gayest sentence ever, Jack?
That's pretty good. Good summary.
Wait, I'm thinking. I'm going to say my favourite two parts so far.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of plot in these two. I'm going to say a sign of things to come. And I don't know if that's good or bad, probably a bit of all of it, to be fair. But before we jump in, before we go any further, jump on over to Who News.
Insert theme tune here.
So, JP, we're going to probably exclude you for the next sort of 5 minutes or so, because we are going to talk about the season one finale.
That's all right.
I hate calling it season one. Series 15.
I know, it's quite upset. Isn't it season 14?
No, 15, I think. Isn't it?
I've absolutely no idea. What did you think, Brad?
I don't know. We didn't do an episode on part one, did we? No.
No.
So this is the first time we've discussed it at all.
Yeah.
I'd say... Part one and part two are absolute polar opposites. First one, absolutely class. Second one, just so far off the pace. It just wasn't good enough.
I remember leaving episode one fully hyped. I think I mentioned on our podcast that it addressed everything. It hadn't answered it, but it like raised up all the questions and everything again. And then, just totally, totally dropped the ball in the second part. I have got some notes, if you'll permit me.
Yeah, go for it. I haven't got any notes, but I've watched it. I think I've watched both parts twice, so I have it was quite a while, a couple of weeks ago now, but yeah, pretty good memory of it, I think.
Interesting. I haven't actually gone back to them yet. Anyway, firstly, where did Mel get the second helmet from? Because she only has the one helmet. She pulls one helmet out, and then they're both wearing one.
I remember that. Lovely little plot hole.
The scene where Kate and everybody dies, right? Why has it got a weird green tint over all of it?
I didn't notice that, to be fair.
Yeah, it was really, really weird.
I kind of thought you were going to actually talk about the plot, but you've just picked up really random, stupid points of the episode.
No. These are just notes that jump to mind. Right, the memory TARDIS is sick, right? Do we agree on that?
Yeah. What's your favourite thing that you saw in there?
Oh, that's a good question. Do you know, I was really sad. I watched, I think it's called like Who Culture or something. They did a breakdown of like 80 Easter eggs in the memory TARDIS. What was the
80.
Coolest thing in there?
I saw something similar, but it was only like a few highlights of things. And one of them I was buzzing with. I think it was quite sick to have in there, to be fair.
Got to say, I actually really like the Jodie's TARDIS fireplace thing.
Yeah, that does actually fit in well as an actual fireplace, to be fair.
It does, didn't it? It looks quite sick. God, what was your favourite?
I did like that. I just love the fact that they put the missing Rose Tyler poster in there.
Oh, yeah. I did see that.
How sick's
that
from all the way back then?
Apparently, you know the book that the girl writes at the end of The Family of Blood and, you know, like
when he goes and gets it signed.
Yeah, is that the end of that episode or is that the end of the finale? I think that's the end of the finale, isn't it? Yeah.
That's actually not the end of the finale. it's the end.
I think
of
I know
the
when.
Finale.
Yeah. I think when he's doing his rounds.
Yeah. You know.
Okay, Memory TARDIS is sick. Glad we agreed. Doesn't make any sense because it's Ruby's memory of the TARDIS. So why is all this shit in there?
Yeah, no, I do agree. Yeah, it's not. Is it specifically Ruby's memory, or is it just?
Yeah,
because
it's in her.
TARDIS,
no, because it's in her time window, and it's on Ruby Road, and it's the VHS camera, and all of it. It doesn't make any sense.
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
Right, there's someone else, another unit person takes Ruby down, is in that time window when the Doctor and Mel then comes back, and the Doctor said, get out of the time window. He's presumably just sent her to die from the dust then, right?
Yeah, I presume so.
Interesting. Right. So the dust cloud comes, kills everybody. The Doctor, Ruby, and Mel escape into space. Why didn't the first episode end there? That's a sick cliffhanger.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people have said that. I mean, part one was unreal. Like, it was class. I loved it. But the only thing that could have made it better was for it to have ended as like Kate disappears in the dust. That would have been class.
Do you think it's because they knew this episode is so shit without this? Imagine if this episode didn't have that bit.
I don't think that's true. I think they genuinely think this episode's a good episode, you know?
They can't. Surely they can't.
They can't think it's good. You can't watch that as a season finale and say, yeah, that's good. We'll whack that out. We'll make people pay £20 to go to the cinema and watch this.
I have to say, even knowing how shit it was, I would have paid to go to the cinema to see this. If that ever comes up again,
if I was home,
probably
yeah,
fly out
had
to
someone
the
to
UK
go with,
to
I probably
see it. What else have I got? Right, so then after he screams into space, it then cuts to that weird desert planet and the spoon scene.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that scene.
What a fucking waste of 5 minutes.
I started to watch, saying that, I don't think I have watched the finale twice. I think I started to watch the commentary thing where Russell watches it with people.
Oh, yeah.
He watches it with Bonnie Langford and the director woman. I don't know who she is.
The director woman.
And they're all like, oh, I love this scene. It's so good. This is such a good scene. It's so great. I just thought, it's terrible. He's just talking to a random woman and getting a spoon. What's the point?
It's awful. And then he says that, like, metal has become this rare commodity. And then the TARDIS spits out a metal whistle at the end of it. Like, what the fuck? Oh, it was so upsetting. And then loads of nonsense happens. I've got at the end, why is Lenny Rush just eating pizza and not saying anything?
That's something that frustrated them most. I sent you that thing, didn't I, of how Russell T. Davies has changed the sonic screwdriver to look like a mouse and look absolutely shocking because he's too scared of it to look like a gun. Then he's got Lenny Rush sitting on his thing shooting out of that. Kid.
I did quite like that. That was quite funny. He's 13, isn't he?
Everyone's comments as well. Is he 13? No, he's got to be 15.
He's 13.
A lot of people have said
I'm
as
sure.
Well, do you see Rose in the background where she's just like tapping away at the...
playing Minecraft,
BBC
I think, in the memes I've seen. Yeah.
Oh, no, BBC Bite Size.
For fuck's sake. Okay.
What's she doing?
Apparently she's controlling the lasers, but I don't know if that's true. Right, listen. If you said to me the Doctor defeats this giant dog by taking it for a walk, I kind of like that idea. You're putting a leash on it, you're taking it for a walk. It's just a dog. But he's supposed to be the greatest villain the Doctor's ever seen. It's such a bullshit ending. It's such a bullshit ending because, like, Ruby just puts a leash around him. I don't understand. How's that happened?
Yeah, I got to admit, I mean, I sort of rewatched the clip, I think. The whole whistle thing annoyed me, the fact that he's like just blowing a whistle. But
the
then when you do realise
that he's
blowing
the
whistle to do the whistle. And I did kind of start to like it a bit more, but the whole fact of blowing a whistle and then attaching him to a lead and taking him on a ride through the time vortex is just a bit shit, really, isn't it?
Stupid. Absolutely stupid. You watched this ahead of me and you were like, oh my God, the CGI in this finale is amazing. And I was like, no way, we're going to get like Sutek devouring the world or some shit like that. And fair play to you, the vortex bit was class, But we
it's the
see
best we've ever had of like actually seeing the TARDIS flying through the vortex and stuff.
I don't know, man. We always see the TARDIS flying through the vortex. I've never had an issue with it before.
No, it was also the fact of when like Sutek's like clawing at it and it sort of like tears away. And I'll tell you what, that really brought the Disney out in Doctor Who, because that was exactly like Spider-Man No Way Home when they
started to break through, wasn't it?
And the sky goes apart. It was identical for me.
Yeah, I'll give you that. Right. Ruby's mum. I like the idea that we create importance from the value that we put on a thing or on a person. That's a great concept.
Yeah, I get that.
But why couldn't a literal god see who this woman was? It does not make any sense.
Yeah, and why was there so much emphasis on it being someone mysterious? Like,
it's just so too annoying.
Much. Like, a little bit would have been fine, but too much. And part of me does, I don't know if this is just my slight bit of hope carrying this, but part of me thinks it will come back to it and she'll be a bigger character than we think. Because Ruby's not gone, she will come back.
So I have a theory on
more,
this.
Isn't it?
I have a theory on this. We didn't see her dad, right?
Yeah, I have heard someone say who they think her dad is, but I can't remember who.
Well, her dad is apparently called William. And
Prime Minister,
Roger William, apparently William means son of William. And they would be about the same-ish age. That would be quite cool. And I really like 73 Yards. I hope that comes back around. But I just, like, it's so... It almost feels aggressive that you build up this thing. Because also, why was it snowing? I think Maestro says something along the lines of, there's a song hidden inside of you.
There's a hidden song deep inside of you,
Like, all of that, and yet the mum is only important because we think the mum is important. No, we think the mum's important because you've told us the mum's important. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. Why is she wearing a fucking hood? Like a cloak?
Exactly. What 15-year-old woman would wear a hood like that? So creepily.
Oh, mate. That pointing thing, right? I actually watched a video where they broke it down. In the first episode, when the Doctor actually travels back in time, there's no fucking sign there anyway. Who is she pointing for?
Yeah, exactly.
Who's looking at that? No,
exactly.
It doesn't make any fucking sense.
The Doctor's going to go and name her. Like, the amount of memes of it, it's embarrassing. The amount of memes
it is
come out
actually
as well.
Embarrassing.
Oh, you point at like M25, and then she's called M25. It's like, it's embarrassing.
It really is. I really like the reunion scene at the end with her mum. I then don't like that it cuts to her mum being part of the family. Like, maybe they should have just left that. You know, I don't know. That all felt a little bit rushed for me. Like, they've just welcomed her in.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but it just links it together.
I suppose. My last note is just, I really, really hope the outfit he's wearing at the end of this episode becomes his sort of permanent Doctor outfit, unless he's traveling back in time or something.
Well, I would agree with that. However, I've seen a leaked photo of Series 2 filming, and he's got like a floaty orange coat, and it looks really nice, to be fair.
Oh, I haven't seen that one yet. I've seen
like
he's got
David
like a
Tennant type floaty orange coat.
Interesting. You'll have to send me that. I've seen like they're doing another vintage episode, and he's got like a blue suit and a bowler hat on. But I haven't seen this. But I haven't seen this. So that's out of 10, I give the finale a 2, I think.
Oh, that low. I guess it has got to be pretty. I mean, do you take it as both parts together and then it evens out at 6, maybe? Because I didn't think part 1 was 10 out of 10.
I don't think it was 10 out of 10. And I also think it can't be 10 out of 10 because it doesn't finish properly.
Well, it does. It's still a good cliffhanger.
It's a good cliffhanger, but it's not answered. So it's all wasted. Also, it's not a good cliffhanger because technically it ends with Susan Triad about to touch the Doctor's face, cut to black. Next episode, what does he does? Oh, he just takes a step back. That's how we're getting out of that, is it? Excellent.
Yeah, true. I think a lot of cliffhangers end like that, though, to be fair, don't they?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. It's a solid 2 out of 10 for me. The whole finale. Part 1 and part 2 is 2 out of 10.
Say 3, 3.5.
Wow. Well, anyway, Russell, buck your fucking ideas up, mate, because
Yeah, so it has.
I don't want that again.
I'm slightly worried that he's continuing the God theme in Series 2, to be fair.
But this is the thing, right? Don't introduce gods and then give us a sci-fi solution. Because this, what do they call it? They call it like magic rope or invisirope or, you know, what? It's the same as the gloves. What does he call his gloves? Intelligent gloves, an intelligent rope. That shouldn't be able to beat a god. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If it was a normal villain, the Goblin King, for example, he uses the gloves and he uses the rope. Fine. That's just a goblin. I get they tried to make it a bit fantastical, but you can say really it's a goblin, it's an alien, same thing. But this is a god. Yeah. He shouldn't be able to just tie a rope. Not even the doctor. Ruby, an earth girl, like a human being, should not be able to tie a rope around a god.
Yeah, that's a good point, to be fair. Like, why didn't, when that even happened, why didn't he just kill them?
Why didn't the fucking, what do they call it? The acolytes or whatever it is, release the smoke and kill them?
Yeah, or at least have killed Ruby. But it's had a bit of drama to the episode.
Why does Sutek literally not move? I don't get it.
it was terrible. It was terrible.
Also, he uses Bonnie Langford to find them, right?
Yeah.
Why did it take so long? He says, I can see all of life.
They're running away, I guess.
Oh, then why did he manage to find... I don't know. I'm just upset by the whole thing.
Yeah, it was poor. It was very, very poor.
Got to say, though, I'm looking forward to the Christmas special.
Because it's a Moffat story.
I think I might be a Moffat fan more than a Russell fan at the minute.
I'm verging on agreeing with you, to be fair. I mean, not RTD1. RTD2 I would agree with, but RTD1 is top tier. I think when we're reviewing that series, well, then we'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. That sort of ties us in quite nicely because we are actually talking about a Moffat episode today.
Yeah, see, we planned it.
We planned that perfectly. It's almost like we're getting good at this.
We're pros.
Speaking of not being pros, is Jack here? Oh, he's unmuted. He must have been listening.
I was listening, to be honest.
I've seen memes come through in the time he's been muted. So.
Yeah, I'm just sending reels on Instagram. It's my pastime. I enjoy doing
Not
that.
To me, you dick. We've got a group chat.
No, we've got a group chat without you.
Oh, yeah, I don't want football ones. I don't want football ones or Formula One. Nothing sport related, please.
So boring. Anyway, so talking of Doctor Who.
Talking of Doctor Who, we are talking about Silence in the Library. I just want to go into this and say, I obviously said sign of things to come. I don't know about you, JP, but Brad, certainly knowing that we're about to hit the Moffat era, this feels like a different show for a little while, if that makes sense. It all like American shows do this all the time. They do what's called like a backdoor pilot. So one show will have an episode where they try and make a spin-off and like the episode of the main show becomes the first episode of the spin-off show. That's what this felt like to me. This felt like the Moffat era has come early. Do you agree?
I'd probably agree with that, to be fair, thinking of what the Moffat era is like. That's why I summarised this episode like that, because it always, for me, the Moffat era feels a little bit more complex, a little bit more adult, but it is really good. But as a kid, you don't enjoy it as much, I don't think.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. Jack, did this feel like, did you get a different vibe from this episode as someone that doesn't know what's coming?
Oh, 100%. So I think the reason why this is probably my favourite two-parter now is similar to the Satan Pit in the fact that I had no idea it's not that what was going on, but I just couldn't work out like until right at the very end. And it was just like, it all clicked into one. And it was just like, that's really cool. I really liked it.
Yeah, I did like that, to be fair. From watching it with you throughout the last few series, you always get it pretty quick with RTD's episodes. But with these, you were guessing quite a bit and you didn't get it until the end. It was quite good to watch.
Yeah. And the thing is as well, I actually had the beauty of watching this twice because the first time we watched it, I didn't take notes because, to be honest, I was eating. So, you know, I can't multitask. But the second time I watched it, of course, I was jotting down my first, you know, initial reactions and everything like that. But the second time you watch it through, it's like, oh, yeah, I see that. And, like, you know, things with things I completely missed. So, like, when Donna's in the kind of in the hard drive thing, I missed the thing, the fact that it was just cutting to what she was saying. So, like, when she was saying, I didn't realize. First time around, I watched it, didn't realize. The second time around, I'm like, oh, yeah, you can see that. Like, it's like, oh, yeah, let's go downstairs. And then it just cuts to when they're outside. And then she's like, I don't remember. The second time I watched it, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's just proving that she's in, you know, in kind of computer space and everything like that. But it was just cool. And like the thing is as well is it's just you've got, Brad and I were saying about this when I was watching it, you've got a villain there that is terrifying to kids. Because, you know, fear of the dark is a pretty common thing of kids, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah.
And you've just gone, yeah, so this monster lives in the dark. And anyway, have fun at bed.
But it's not every part of the dark. It's
like Jaws, though, isn't it? It's the threat of kind of, you know, when you watch the first Jaws film, you don't really see Jaws a lot. You see his, you know, his fins, and you see the water, and you see under, you know, kind of the point of view of Jaws, but you don't really see the monster. In this, you don't see him at all. They're technically invisible. They live in the shadows, but they're there. And I really like that. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, no, it's a properly scary concept. And I mean, I even like at the beginning, he almost tries to make you think that books are going to be the enemies this episode. Because Doctor Who has that. I can't think of any examples off the top of my head, but it's, you know, it's make the ordinary scary. You know, a Dalek is a bin.
Yeah.
You know, the kids in the gas mask child. I'm trying to think, what's some other...
Well, the drawing. Yeah. We have the drawing and the episode I didn't like, the London Olympics.
Oh, yes. Yeah, exactly. Your drawing can be dangerous. So, yeah, it's done brilliantly. There's, like, a genuinely spine-chilling bit is where he goes, you know, when you can see, like, in a sunbeam, the dust, that's Ashton Arada. I'm like, oh, that's actually a little bit creepy, to be fair.
Yeah. It's just really, and the fact that they then managed to visualize it with a spacesuit with a skeleton, it's just phenomenal. You know, and they set it up perfectly with the ghosting thing and everything like that. It just works really, really well.
No, I totally, totally agree with you. Vashton Arada. Brilliant villain. In terms of villains, where would you rank it, JP? Is it up there with the Daleks or is it down there with the Absorbaloth?
Actually, you know what? I thought the Absorbaloth was involved in one way.
What?
Well, with the statues.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's talk about the creepy statues then, yeah.
Yeah. Genuinely, I was like, hold on a minute. Is that the Absorb? And then they kind of retconned it, but they were like, you know, this is just like kind of, I think the doctor describes it as just like having a park bench in our times.
Yeah, just donating a bench. Yeah. It's, even the effect looks pretty good, to be fair.
I thought it looked a bit shoddy, actually.
No, I don't think it looks that bad. I think you get the actual 3D-ness of it. I like the fact that they're bald as well. That adds like a creepiness to it. Yeah, I don't know. I didn't have an issue. Brad, did you have an issue with those weird, creepy donate your face things?
I thought they look pretty good, to be fair. I mean, I don't think they're bald. I think it's just they're at the front of their face. You can't see hair from the top, but I thought they're pretty. It's creepy the way that the little noise it makes when it turns as well. The whole thing is just creepy, isn't it?
The little noise it makes when that first one is reading out the message and then it just goes, arg, snark, slick, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, this is brutal.
I mean, that's the thing as well, because they've given it a robotic. It's kind of like we've touched upon it. I can't remember which one, but the Uncanny Valley. You know, and the fact that it looks human but it sounds robotic, and you're just like, nah, there's something fucky with this. Like, it's And it's just where it's just I'm reading out a message, and it's just like you can tell that the person who left that message was actually, you know,
screaming basically.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just reading it just like flat with no emotion. And it's just like, shit, that's terrifying.
Yeah. Shall we talk about Riversong?
Yeah.
JP, you've obviously heard me and Brad talking about her. What did you think? Introduction to someone?
Yeah, confession time. It took me a lot longer than it should have to work out what had happened.
Yeah, it did take you a while.
Took me a while to work out what happened. The fact that the doctor had met her in the future as she travelled back.
Oh, I see. Okay, you were trying to work out the chronology of it.
Yeah, how she knew him.
It took me a lot longer than it should have, but I think that's really cool. And you know that she's special straight away because she writes the message on the psychic.
Love that, so you're by the way.
There's got to be something. But to be honest, my initial reaction to who left that message on there, I thought it was Rose.
Oh, okay.
Because they put the message had a kiss at the end of it. I was like, shit, it's Rose. I mean, it was River Song, but like I thought it was Rose. But,
yeah, that would have been quite cool.
Doesn't Rose show up in this episode as well?
I think she does. I think she does.
Oh, I missed her. Go on, JP.
I'm convinced when you're looking at Cal in her living room and everything like that, there is a painting / drawing, like a kid's thing, on the back, and it is a blonde-haired woman. And there is no other blonde-haired women in there. And
I saw this whilst doing the research. You've just reminded me. Apparently, I missed it in the episode, but apparently next to it is also a picture of a wolf. So do with that really? What you will.
It's got to be.
Yeah, yeah. No, you are right. Like, that did come up.
Because I rewound there and I was like, no, Brad's like, no, it's not. When I watched it back the second time, I was like, there's no other blonde-haired women in the episode.
No, good pickup. To be fair, you actually just flat out got the Easter egg this week. I love that.
Is there not a part where she's also on a screen somewhere saying "Doctor" though? Or is that
midnight? No, that's midnight.
Fucking hell, it's your turn. Okay.
I'm getting mixed up.
I just want to say I forgot how Riversong is from the get go, because I think like by the last time we see her, she's oh, hello, sweet. And she's very sort of overdramatic with it. But
she's not serious in this episode.
But she's still, hello, sweetie. And I used to date an android. She's still the same character. Like, I was very impressed, to be fair.
Yeah, she was kind of, I put a note there just saying pretty boy. She said, you, pretty boy, come with me. And the doctor's looking around like, me? Like, which is she seemed very lively, I think, and in a good way. Not like I don't really like Donna in the fact that she's very shouty, loud, but like Riversong, it's almost like David Tennant's Doctor, you know, very kind of bubbly, energetic, curious to a point, you know, wants to know what's going on and how to fix it, and I really like that, and I love the fact that she actually stuck to her guns as well, because at any point in that episode, she could have told the doctor what she was and how she knew him and everything like that. But she stuck to her guns. She was like, no, spoilers, I'm not telling you.
What did you think of the whole Riversong's diary? Has that got you intrigued?
Yes, because I noticed straight away it looks like a TARDIS.
Looks like a TARDIS. Mentions a few dates. I don't think it's a spoiler to say she mentions Crash of the Byzantium, which is the next time we see her.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Just love all of that. Yeah, the one with the priest soldiers.
Yeah,
that's the Crash of the Byzantium. She's got a sonic screwdriver.
Yeah, she does. She does. Which, again, was really interesting because I'm sitting there and I was in a situation where I knew that Riversong was obviously important. Because I've heard you and Brad talk about her before. I'd never met her through the episode, so I had no idea who she was. So I'm sitting there thinking, you know, she whips out a sort of screwdriver. She's talking about, like, kind of, I know you from the future. I'm like, is she another time?
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
But of course, I mean, I don't know. It was never really explained who she is. It was just that she, you know, was with the doctor. So, yeah, who knows?
And she's also got, and this is confirmed, I looked this up, Captain Jack's square gun.
Oh, is that who it was? Ah, okay.
So apparently Captain Jack leaves it on the TARDIS before his last adventure in the TARDIS, and River Song just picks it up one day when she's in the TARDIS. So that is confirmed, Captain Jack's square gun from his first episode. Another Moffat episode, by the way.
Yeah, it is, to be fair.
There you go. Just don't leave guns lying around.
Just the last thing I want to say on River Song is Moffat started writing. He was heavily inspired by The Time Traveler's Wife. Have either of you read it or seen the film or the TV show?
No, sorry, mate.
It's bloody good. And it's basically this episode. The guy travels in time back and forth along his girlfriend or his wife's timeline. And it's all told from her point of view. And it's brilliant. And I just love the fact that last year or 2 years ago or so, he actually adapted it. He did the TV show for The Time Traveler's Wife, which I think is pretty cool. And the need to watch. It's got the guy with shit on his nose from the Inbetweeners movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there you go. That's...
might watch it.
Yeah, I'm going to go watch it right now. Bye, everybody.
Yeah.
I think that's enough on River Song. Right, JP, I can hear you literally chomping at the bit to talk about Miss Evangelista.
Oh, no, I'm chomping at the bit because you know why? Because she's another Centrinians person.
Welcome back to our Centrinians podcast, for fuck's sake.
It's really weird it keeps happening.
It is weird that it keeps on happening. I don't understand.
How many did we add?
I think this is three on a trot now, isn't
what?
It?
Three, really? Yeah, no, it could be three on a trot, yeah.
What was it last week?
It another was the lady another that played actress, Agatha Christie. Yeah. The lady that played Agatha Christie. But,
for fuck's sake.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait a minute.
I was genuinely doing some research into this episode. I thought, I'll just see what else she's been in. And it came up at the top of her IMDb. It's like, here we go. Here's half an hour wasted whilst we talk about Centrinians.
What about the Doctor Who link, though? You know who else she's linked to in Doctor Who?
Go on.
I don't.
So she literally, I think it was like last week, she got married. You know who she got married to?
Who?
The boy in the from Love Actually, from the Family of Blood episodes.
No way. That's not her.
Right down.
Yeah.
That's sick. I actually rate that.
Yeah, oh, mad.
That's pretty cool, to be fair. What did you think of her?
Oh, I really liked her, but she just did the most red shirt thing in the world. Like, because they're all like fumbling around, and she's like, "Oh, can I help?" And I felt really bad for her because they're like, "Oh, she's there, like, can I help?" And everyone's just like, "Go sit in the corner and do nothing, useless twat." And then she's just like, this door opens, and she's just like, "Oh, I'm gonna go into the shadow realm over there with the shadow monsters." And that's just, I was like, "Oh." But I did like her kind of character arc. Where, because the thing is, I wouldn't have, like, she says that her intelligence was increased and everything like that, but I wouldn't have said that she was like a stupid person before she was Ian.
She detonated, or she ejected herself in the pod, escape pod, twice, thinking it was the toilet.
Yeah, she has shown to be stupid.
Yeah, I lost all respect for her after that thing. And I must have forgotten about that. That is, you're irredeemable if you've done that twice.
Oh, hold on a minute. I'm going to say now, do you know what one of the most dangerous things in a submarine was in World War II?
No.
Flushing the toilet. The amount of U-boats that were sunk by someone flushing the toilet incorrectly is a lot more than it should be. It's easy.
But not jettisoning yourself out.
Well, at least you're still alive. You sink a U-boat while you're underwater, you're fucked.
I don't know. I don't think I liked her as a character alive. And then she becomes this weird, witchy...
How creepy is it?
I no, thought she was the woman in black. I'm not going to lie. I started shitting myself. I was like, oh, no.
It is genuinely pretty creepy. Yeah, it's genuinely pretty creepy. I felt like it would have needed more than one decimal. But she says something like they put the decimal place one place in the wrong. I like, no, it's a couple of zeros out. I think you're not that smart all of a sudden. Like, also, who is it for? Like, why is Donna getting this special treatment and nobody else is?
Because she was the only one that treated her nicely. The nice lady.
I don't know. I don't know. I also think it's really arrogant. She says, they think I'm stupid because I'm pretty. No, they think you're stupid because you're thick as fuck, love. Nothing to do with you being pretty.
No, I know. I think she got I think she got the heart, you know, kind of. She was hard done by before she died.
I disagree. I also, I do quite like her death scene. I think it slows the episode down. I think it's quite nice. I think it really emphasizes the stakes in this episode. And it introduces us to the ghosting thing that obviously comes back and saves her with a song. That's a really nice bit for me. But the bit that I fucking love is it cuts away from Miss Evangelista. Or maybe I've got my notes wrong here, but there's one bit where it cuts away from one of the spacesuits to the doctor and everyone running down the corridor. And there's like this mad guitar riff. Did you guys notice that? It's like...
No, but carry on.
I'll clip it and put it on the Insta because I was just like, fuck. And then it changed, like it was like guitar into like operatic, scary, Jaws-esque music. And the music was just on point this episode, was it not?
It's one of those things. This sounds really stupid, but I've got to listen to the music more because every single time I completely miss. Because it's that part of the parcel for me. It's just like, oh, the music don't like kind of properly listen. But then I think the problem is like I do like things like Star Wars or something like that because I've seen it so many times. You're then not entirely focused on the film. You're looking at other things as well. So I think that's kind of where I'm missing. But it's it just adds tension and just as you say, it raises the stakes and it is good.
I think with Doctor Who as well, you don't realise how good the music is until you have a shit version of it, such as Chimera when it wasn't Murray Gold. And then you really appreciate Murray Gold's work.
I probably do agree with what Jack's saying though, because I haven't noticed it as much in this new era of Doctor Who, even though it's Murray Gold back.
No,
but still,
I think
it's great, but I'm just not picking up on it as much as I am doing this rewatch, to be fair.
But is that because it feels into the episode well, whereas previously it didn't?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Other than Bad Guy in that period drama one that we watched.
Yeah, but that was so soft. You only saw that because you saw someone do a video on it. No one would have noticed otherwise. That's the subtlety of it.
Donna's little adventure in the hard drive. Get rid of all of that for me, I reckon.
Which bit?
Really?
Yeah, where she's like saved to the system and she's living her life with her stuttering husband.
No, I think that adds quite a lot to it.
Because
I honestly, sorry
to cut you off, but I was sitting there. I thought I understood what was going on. And then suddenly Donna appeared on the TV in a hospital with Dr. Moon. And I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. Because at first I was thinking that the girl was real, but then I couldn't work out why the girl was also at a camera as well that was floating around. And then she's talking to Dr. Moon. And I'm like, right, he's obviously a real person or something like that. And then he appears on the TV. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, it genuinely, I had no idea. I thought I knew what was going on. That happened. I was like, I've got no idea. And I like that.
It didn't do anything for me in terms of the story. I quite like the little romance between Donna and the stuttering person. And I like it at the end where he's trying to call her and can't get her attention. I like all of that. I think it doesn't do anything to the plot other than add this sort of escape card at the ending to save River. And I think River should have died in this episode. I don't think she should have been saved to this hard drive.
She basically did die, though. She's not going to come back to life.
But She kind of does in one of the future episodes. We see her beyond this point.
Oh, really?
I think it's all done too confusing and doesn't really work for me. And it also, in theory, gives the Doctor and River a happy ending. Because have you heard the Doctor Moon theories, Brad?
I was going to ask you about this. I mentioned this to Joe Pearce. We watched it. There's a theory that he's a version of the Doctor, isn't there?
So I looked into this because, like, same as you, I just heard some rumours and thought, oh, it must just be a future Doctor. So there was a leaked email between Russell and Stephen Moffat confirming that the plan was they are going to make Doctor Moon the 45th and final version of the Doctor. And as he's dying and can't regenerate again, he uploads himself to the computer so that he can live out the rest of his days with River Song. So it's basically confirmed from Stephen and Russell.
Yeah, I like that. But that will never happen.
It would be a mad way to end the show. Could you imagine?
Yeah, but we won't have the time to get to the 45th Doctor and Colin Salmon will still be alive.
No, imagine they've already filmed it.
Oh, okay, that would be pretty bad. Oh,
and it's like saved in a vault somewhere. And then they can...
Oh, yeah, because isn't there a film or something that's happened with? There's a film that's been done now, but it's been released in like 40 years or something.
Must have been. I did one in primary school, you know, where you bury it and then you... What's that called?
Yeah, that's like a time capsule, this is different. Time this is actually filming something to be released in like 40 years. That's mad.
That is pretty cool, to be fair. Yeah, could you imagine, like, genuinely, I wouldn't put it past Stephen Moffat to do something like that either.
Yeah, true.
That would be absolutely quality. So, yeah, that's just the theory I'd mean. I don't know. I feel like it's really oddly paced as well. Like, it slows down the plot so much when you compare it to, like, the action that's going on in the library. And I suppose it's probably a good juxtaposition, but it's... I should probably just mention as well, I still really fucking like it. It's just the weakest part of this episode for me, I think.
Yeah.
I don't have any issues with it, to be honest.
No, I'm with Brad on this one. I actually think it the opposite. I actually think it furthered the plot because it kind of, it just gave a lot more explanation.
No, fair enough. Speaking of the plot in the library, though, we get River whispering into the Doctor's ear something that we don't know. Just shout out to David Tennant here. That's a fucking excellent moment. The emotion he puts on his face and the way that it then completely, like, the Doctor fully completely changes and now trusts River no end. Like, what a moment.
Yeah, David Tennant is clearly the best Doctor.
He's a pretty good actor. Oh, I forgot to mention, one of Donna's kids is called Josh.
Is he?
Yeah.
That's because he's AI generated and the easiest name to think of.
Actually, named after Stephen Moffat's son.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The two kids, Joshua and Ella, is Stephen Moffat's son and his son's best friend, apparently.
Oh, all right.
Wonder if they are still your dad, Stephen fucking Moffat. Like, his son was on set watching this be filmed. Could you imagine that as a childhood?
Yeah, that would be
class. That's the thing, though. It's like Paul Rudd. If he ever wears a name tag that's not his character's name, he wears it as Jack, because Jack is the name of his first son.
There you go. Love that.
Yeah, that was pretty
random.
JP, I know you love checking whether a countdown is a real-time countdown.
Didn't count it, actually, this one.
He's let us down.
He has let us down. I did it for you, though. It's okay. It comes on exactly 20 minutes before the end of the episode, but it's not live 20 minutes.
Oh.
What do you mean?
You gave me so much hope there.
So it's like, as soon as he activates the 20-minute timer, I flicked up, and it said, exactly 20 minutes remaining on BBC iPlayer. But that included the credits, that included all the bit after the timer. So they rushed the time a bit. But I think it's quite cool that it's 20 minutes until it officially ends.
Pretty good.
The Doctor gets knocked out from one punch from River Song for an inexplicable amount of time.
Yeah, not great, is it?
When did you get a haircut?
Spoilers. Spoilers.
I think that's pretty on brand. I think that's not something you need to ask a question about, to be fair.
Yeah, from knowing her, I guess it probably is. But the fact that, I guess she could have just had him in a bag or something or in her pocket.
Even, like, I wouldn't put it past the doctors probably got it on his bigger on the inside pockets and she knew that, so she pulled them out.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
She goes on to say, actually, JP, that bit where she sat on the chair about to sacrifice herself, did you find that emotional? I know you famously don't, but did you get a little bit of emotion out of it?
The problem is, there wasn't, and this is going to sound really strange, but there wasn't enough character building with her. So I didn't really have a connection. Obviously, she is something special to the doctor, and the doctor's something special to her. But I wasn't sitting there going, oh, this is really sad because I really know this character. So it kind of almost felt a bit like the end of The Poison Sky, where the, what's his name?
Elon Musk, Rattigan.
Yeah, Rattigan, that's it. Where he sacrifices it. It was almost like that. The doctor was supposed to do it, and then somebody else took his choice away and sacrificed themselves. I was like, oh, okay, it's like that.
Mm. Hasn't this all come back at some point, though?
What do you mean?
I can't really say too much.
Uh-oh.
Future reference, but do you not remember, Josh?
Give me something else to go on.
Flashbacks.
Flashbacks?
Flashbacks. Yeah, do you remember?
In what episode?
Oh, I'll text you.
Oh, he's going to text him here, Josh.
Brad, did it hit differently for you, having seen everything that comes further down the line? I thought it was quite emotional.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty emotional. You know, especially when you know what River means to her in future series as well.
Or what she doesn't mean. I love that she goes, oh, you showed up with a new haircut and a suit and you gave me a sonic screwdriver, which is exactly what Peter Capaldi does in his last episode with her. Shows up in a brand new suit with a new haircut. Love that.
I did think that that was, I was assuming that the doctor technically meets her for the first time with a different doctor.
Maybe. We've still got a few episodes of Tennant yet.
Mm-hmm.
Not many, sure though. About that one, Brad.
No, you're not sure?
Not sure about that.
Yeah, it is. It goes back even further, but definitely to this series.
Maybe. Yeah. JP.
Find out.
Mm-hmm.
What are your theories on River telling the Doctor, or sorry, the Doctor telling River his name?
I said that they must have been married.
Okay. First proper romantic love interest for the Doctor.
Yeah. Because thinking about it, when you get married, you have to say your full name, didn't you?
Okay, yeah.
So
Doctor,
that was
take the...
Yeah.
Doesn't work, does it?
No, exactly. So I think that, you know, that, but yeah, I really, do we ever find out what the Doctor's actual name is?
Spoilers?
I bet it's Stephen.
Dave. Dave the Doctor.
No. Is it Stephen Moffat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would do that for sure. I'd name him myself if I was the writer at the time. I'm surprised Chris Chibnall didn't, to be fair. Sounds like something he would do.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other things you want to say about this? There's a little shop mention. David Tennant loves a little shop.
Yeah, like the little shop. Yeah, that was pretty good. There was a lot. I mean,
it's a lot of plot.
There's a lot of plot, and that's why I liked it. And I like the fact that, you know, kind of you see Cal everywhere, C-A-L. You see it in the hospital, you see it in the library, and then it turns out that it's the acronym for the. But it's the initials of the little girl that's in there.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I really like. But I just... It was really... Like, as I said at the start of this episode, it just kept me guessing the entire time.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I really like. And, you know, to the point where I thought Donna had got eaten. So when she gets teleported back to the TARDIS, they initially give that red herring of... The guy's like, oh, I've now not got two shadows. And you see Donna kind of like, something happens to her. And I'm like, shit, she's been eaten.
Okay.
Like which I really liked. The only thing that I just that did make me kind of chuckle a bit is the bit where they're in the room and then he says about the there's six life forms, but there's only five of us. And you do see the Dave in the background kind of there, but he just doesn't move. Why does the swarm wait?
Yeah, I mean, there's some creative license with the whole building tension stuff. If they can create a shadow, why aren't they just moving in like a cloud of Bashta Narada? Like, there's a lot of things that but you just
Don't
take it
ruin the
with a pinch of salt.
story.
No, I'm happy to take it with a
No,
pinch of salt.
it just made me chuckle because you can sit there, and, the doctor's like, "Oh, these, Vashadarada are, are predators that swarm and they eat, and then they also pause for dramatic
Yeah.
effect,"
And
which
we
made me
haven't
chuckle.
even mentioned it, but I love the fact that they're not really a bad guy. Like humanity is the bad guy. We uplifted their home, turned them into books, and now like that again, just such a good concept coming from Moffat. And listen, his era is very hit and miss with things like this. Even Sherlock, to a degree, which he did, is quite hit and miss with things like this. Doesn't always stick the landing, but I am so
Sherlock
excited
is
to go
class, though.
back. Sherlock is not the last series, though.
No, that's terrible.
But I'm so excited to. This is hyped me up even more to redo his era, especially looking at it with this sort of, I don't, we're not, critics or anything, but with more of an analytical hat on than previously. Are you excited for it, JP? His
I
era?
can't wait. I genuinely, as I said, I really enjoyed these two episodes were just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I'm looking forward to see what else he brings to the table for Doctor Who. Yeah, it's got a bit of everything. But so I'm
Anything
just
to
looking for
add,
my notes.
Brad?
Not from this episode specifically, but yeah, I'd say like I am excited for Matt Smith's era. However, I feel like there are, like you say, a lot of hit and miss. There's some bad episodes in this era, and I feel like bad Tennant episodes I will happily rewatch because it's Tennant, and I think I'm going to struggle with Matt Smith's bad ones.
Whoa.
Interesting. Off the top of my head, and it probably is because I haven't seen the Matt Smith era for a while, I cannot think of any episodes worse than Love and Monsters, worse than the
But that's the point.
Olympics.
You can't because Matt Smith's episodes aren't as memorable.
But I don't know if I'd rather take forgettable over shit.
I would rather have actual good, memorable episodes than none of them be memorable at all. But I
I
think in
also
right
think,
now, Matt Smith has no standout episodes for me.
okay, interesting. I also think you might be blinded by nostalgia, and this is being proved with the new
Probably.
series. And Russ is probably putting out more duds than Moffat. Anyway, we digress. We've still got two more stories with Tennant, technically.
Well,
Kind
no,
of,
because
in a way, yeah,
we'll
in a
talk
way.
about
With
Midnight.
this series, yeah. No, but Midnight, and then it's the finale.
Yeah.
So two more stories. I was correct. Thank you very much.
Yeah, three-part finale, I guess, yeah.
And JP, you
Yeah.
said you were checking your notes. Do you have anything just chucking at the end here?
Yeah, why does a library have a self-destruct system?
Why wouldn't it? Why does a
What?
planet-sized library
Don't
only
ruin the
have
story.
4,000 people on it?
I just don't understand. Like, it's like going to Tesco's, and they're like, "Yeah, by the way, Tesco's is going to blow up in 5 minutes. So, yeah, better pack up your shopping and get out." But
I
I
bet
didn't
technically
understand.
you could blow up a Tesco.
Well, yeah, you just
Whoa,
do the gas
easy,
lines and oh
easy.
yeah, shit, yeah. Oh, that's it.
Easy, we know
Oh
your
no, the
background.
FBI are listening now. We're fucked up.
Welcome to the Al Qaeda podcast.
Oh
We're going to
God.
bomber boots.
It's like the what was it they called it? The anarchist cookbook, out there.
Right, anyway, JP, love it, mate, or hate it.
Oh, easy love it. Easy love it.
Yeah, for sure. Bradley?
Yeah, easy love it. We've spoke about it and we only turn anything to it, so love it.
No, it is frankly a
And
love
for
it.
you, Josh?
Absolutely a love it. I would say I'd probably still put the Satan Pit episodes above these two. Just my opinion
Interesting.
as a
I'd
two-parter.
say they're on par, to be fair.
very different stories, I suppose. But no, listen, yeah. Thanks for coming as always, everybody. That wraps up our Stephen Moffat two-part before he takes over as leader. Yeah, that's all from us, folks.
Yeah, thank you for listening,
adios,
guys.
Amigos.
No, that's my adios, sign-off. I do the adios, amigos.
That is
adios, oh, yeah, amigos.
No!
This is the worst outro we've ever done.
Adios, amigos.
Adios, amigos. JP, I thought you were going to cut it and do one then. Right, I'm cutting the recording. Adios,